Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. And I'm hanging with the usual gang of idiots. We are going to talk Go Home Show, May 23rd, 2023. In just 4 or 5 days, we've got Battleground, after which the three of us will be doing a VIP roundtable. So, yeah, good build for that show. Lots to like about this show. Maybe things that, you know, the show doesn't need an overrun. it seems like you did everything you had to do within that two-hour window. Let's open. Hard to say what the main event is here. I'm not going to treat that Dragunov-Dijak thing as the main event because it wasn't. But we'll get to that thing. Let's talk ladies first. Let's talk the tournament because this kind of bookended the show. Really, really cool beginning, laying out mission statements from all four women still alive in the tournament, the reasons they want to win, the reasons they're going to win. Yeah, this, if you got a tournament, this is the best way to do it. I don't know why this isn't standard practice, but a big win here. In your opener, Lyra Valkyria flattens Cora Jade in not very much time. Seems like a lot of work was done to get Cora Jade to the back to kind of where she is now, tweaking her look, tweaking her style. 3 minutes and 40 seconds with a roundhouse kick that was... It didn't look like it was going to finish the match. Let's say that. It really didn't look like a finisher.
It was no black pass.
Yes. Yes.
No, it wasn't.
So Cora gets her heat back, allegedly, by attacking Lyra after the match. And Lyra talks to Mackenzie Mitchell later, updates her. Mackenzie says, hey, I just want to give your opponent as much information as possible about your injury. She didn't say that, but that is what happened. Lyra did that. She's hurt, but she'll be there. If you don't know what this means for the result of of Sunday's match, then welcome to wrestling. Your main event, Roxanne Perez versus Tiffany Stratton. We've already got our baby face, so we needed our heel. Tiffany Stratton wins in a pretty nice little match, a little bit of mistimed stuff here and there, but I thought they did okay. 9:39 with the prettiest moonsault. First, Vic calls it the most beautiful moonsault in the world because he's just guessing. It's all guesswork with him.
He called a super kick a crested kick earlier in the night.
Vic just
doesn't
we
know.
When we don't know, we say that's the finish. Oh, she won't get up from that. It's her finisher. Just say it's her finisher. 9 minutes and 39 seconds, quite a bit longer on a night that didn't have a lot of wrestling minutes. 36 minutes and 32 seconds. So 7 matches, but confined into a pretty small space, like 60% of it into 2 matches. But Roxy will not go on to be a 2-time champ here anyway. And Tiff is going to move on, and she's going to beat Lyra Valkyria, who has the out and a ready-made feud. But yeah, and then the girl in the black hood attacked Roxanne Perez and ran off. And as soon as she was gone, the announcers forgot about her. Like short attention span theater. They're like, well, let's move on.
ADD.
Here you go. So that was the tournament. It bookended the show. And I thought that was nice because this was the part of Battleground that needed the most hype, and it got it. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. My report for tonight's Go Home Show is up at the Torch on the VIP side. I wrote that NXT had two goals for tonight. One was the culmination of this women's tournament, and then two was building the rest of the matches for Sunday. And if you just look at it in that regard, they had a successful night tonight. not all the segments are great, not all the matches are great, but the show overall accomplished what it set out to accomplish. So good for them. And it did make me more excited to see what happens at Battleground in some respects. To the whole Valkyria Jade thing. So yes, they have the ready-made feud for Valkyria coming out of this, but I also like Dolan and Jane. I want this feud to be over because they just don't seem to have good chemistry with each other. And it showed again tonight, and it might be why they only scheduled them to go about 2.5 minutes tonight. Some of Valkyria's offense, it just seems like either Jade is underestimating the distance that they have between each other, or she's afraid to take it, because a lot of light gets shown specifically for Valkyria in her matches with Jade, from what I have observed, and it doesn't do her any favors. And like you said, that spin kick at the end, it didn't really land very well, and yet that was the finish. Jade getting heat back isn't really, I don't know, because they didn't, how do I put this? They made it seem like what she did to her knee was going to be more impactful than what they did, but I guess if they just want to have it be a singles match and have the feud afterward, cool. I thought this might be a way for them to either insert Jade as a triple threat or remove Jade and have, or remove Valkyria and put Jade or Perez in, but I just need to see more build on this coming, maybe on Sunday, maybe Jay gets involved on, but I hope it's just a clean match on Sunday. And then since you brought up the hooded figure in the main event too, like, great match. Yeah, there were some missed time spots, but I think what you saw with Stratton is she's not just a gymnast. She has, yeah, Perez is small, but there are some impressive power spots tonight from Tiffany Stratton, specifically when Perez went for the Lope and she caught her on her shoulders and just, and you know, the story of this match, I like the story of the match, by the way, was Perez, and if you listened, when Perez entered, Joseph said, it's rare to say a 21-year-old is the veteran, but Perez is, and in the match, in the early stages of it, you kind of saw that, where she was countering everything Stratton had, putting her in pinning combinations, and even when Stratton found a counter, she would counter that. So that was a lot of the early story, and Vic Joseph sucks at calling move names. It's over the moonsault all over again. Moon over the moonsault. That's what he would call it, right? Moon over moonsault.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. Gosh. But yeah, Stratton should win. Last week I advocated for her to be the one because it's clear. Like, there's no argument to be made that out of the character work, she has the most defined and strongest character of all four of them. So she should definitely be the one to carry that title moving forward. And for Perez, you get her feud to be that hooded figure coming out of Battleground and keeps her away from the title picture. And again, I'm still saying that's Tatum Paxley. I hope it really is because, you know, I called it in the breakout tournament that I saw something there, and I called this when it happened that it's Tatum Paxley, and I just feel like there's a lot more they could do with her. And if this is something they do and she gets a feud with Perez, then I'll be all for it. But if it isn't Paxley right now, I'm struggling to think of who it could be aside from some kind of new signee or something.
8 women out with ACL tears, so the hooded figure has been real, real busy in NXT. it's a real commitment to the bit. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. JB came in late with an email about the ladies, so before I throw to Nate, I will read that. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Number one, I was surprised at the quickness of the Valkyria-Cora Jade match. I'm not surprised that Valkyria won, although it strongly signaled that the heel Stratton would be winning later in the night. I was surprised that a semifinal in a tournament that had gotten so much hype didn't get much time to shine. It does make me wonder how much they trust Jade to carry her weight in a long match. Also, I thought that Valkyria's finisher to the match lacked the necessary impact to be convincing. Yes. Number two. I know that it's been talked about quite a bit, but I'm still confused as to why they didn't have Perez versus Stratton as the final to the tournament at Battleground rather than the semifinal tonight. I'll weigh in. I think that the shortness of the first one, there was a lot to cover tonight, a lot to do. They didn't have to do a really strong sell for Battleground, but they went ahead and did it. They had a really, really good go-home show after a pretty good hype show last week. To really, like, Battleground's the most excited I've been for one of their big events in a long time. just because of the work they put in. They're running the same main event this time as last time, and I'm 10 times more interested in that match than I was the last time they wrestled.
And Deliver's supposed to be their biggest show.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe they recognize that it was a little bit of a lackluster promotion, so they needed to do a hard sell tonight. That means just about every match gets short shrift. Now we can talk about whether Fraser and Dar should go 12:55. It was good, but did it need to? That's a good question. I think that this is fine because Cora did gain something in defeat. She's got a storyline coming out of this, which is the goal. So if she's not going to be in that tournament final, she may as well get something out of this. That's why I think mainly this was short. And yeah, as for why Perez and Stratton isn't the final, I think it's probably as simple as if Roxy's going to lose, they'd rather have her do it on a small stage than a big one. They don't want her to lose the big one. So having her lose the semi-big one is probably better for her. It's also a stage in the development of Lyra Valkyria. They kind of know what Roxy can do in those spots, but they want to know what Lyra can do in a one-on-one spot in this position. It's sink or swim time for both Lyra and Tiff in this match. It is a big, big, big proving ground for both of them. Nate?
Yes. Yes, it is. You know, Tiffany Stratton, you know, as you guys said, she's clearly the most polished in this entire tournament, for that matter. So I think seeing her carry the championship it certainly makes the most sense. We haven't, you know, we've talked about this a few times over the past handful of weeks, but we haven't really had a very strong NXT champion, women's champion, in quite a while. You know, we've had, you know, Mandy Rose was technically a long-term champion, but I don't know if I'd consider her a strong champion. You know, I know, you know, Bruce didn't either when we were talking about it last week. So hopefully, you know, Tiffany Stratton with that character and, you know, the fans, like the fan response behind her, even though she's a heel, but, you know, I think you're going to love to hate her. I think that's going to propel her forward quite a bit and hopefully kind of revitalize the women's division a little bit, and kind of make you care about it a bit more. You know, for example, like Roxanne Perez, you know, when she was champion, it was a cool story. It was a great story. I had a lot of trouble buying her as champion for some reason. And I think that might have been, I don't know if necessarily by design, especially with the way that she, you know, kind of relinquished the title and kind of felt like she was a meek champion, I guess. But, you know, Tiffany Stratton, on the other hand, absolute opposite. You know, she's confident in herself, her ability. You know, she has the look and she can back up that ability. So I'm all for it. You know, in terms of the matches here tonight, the opening match, I kind of agree with you guys. It was okay. It was, you know, certainly a little sloppy, and you know, they definitely don't seem to have great chemistry together. They, of course, being Jade and Valkyria. I was kind of half and half which way I thought the opening match was going to go. And obviously the opening match is going to determine the winner for this match, or for the main event. You know, almost definitely anyway. I was kind of like 50-50. I was thinking we may end up seeing Jade get the win and kind of I thought they were going to wind up going back to Jade and Perez. I'm glad they didn't. I feel like we've seen enough of that. Valkyria and, you know, Stratton, it's something new. I don't know how excited your mainstream NXT fan will necessarily be about it. Tiffany Stratton feels like she's on that level, but I don't know if Valkyria necessarily does. For me, she feels kind of like an upper mid-carder right now, not necessarily a main eventer. So it's like, I'm not over the moon about the match. I'm looking forward to it, don't get me wrong, but certainly not the way I would be for, you know, like I was for Sasha versus Bayley, for example, you know, that was, you know, certainly a match I was looking forward to. Let's see. I think I touched on everything I wanted to touch on in email. So we'll move on.
So you're not over the moon about the match. Are you moon over moon about the match?
I'm moons over my hammy because I'm hungry and I could use a sandwich.
You seem like a breakfast guy.
I love breakfast.
I've heard people say that Jade is ahead of Stratton in development. I just want to know what show they're watching.
That sure is Neato.
There's a lot
that I do like about what Jade's done. And if we did a side by side comparison, we'd probably laugh out loud at what we were seeing early on. That's going to happen some in a developmental territory. I know it would happen with JC Jane, who started off with the worst single interview I've ever seen. That's going to happen some. Won't co-sign that one. Okay, I guess we can go to Dijak and Dragunov. There, last week, it was pretty clear they were heading towards a last man standing. Was this announced on the show, or did they just think it was?
The meeting tonight?
I thought they announced something last week, but I think they might have changed the stip to this. I could be wrong, but I want to say they announced a different stip.
Because last week in my recap, when they were doing the torture thing, Ilya said, "You've done everything you can, but I'm still standing." And I went, "Oh, last man standing match." So I thought that was pretty clear, but I didn't think they announced that. Then this week they just announced it like everyone knew. And maybe everyone did. But at any rate, that was what was going on. Contract signing didn't even start off with any pleasantries like you would expect from two affable gents like these. Was there anything else? I think each of them had another segment, but if there was any meat, you guys are going to have to remind me.
Dijak entered the building, and as soon as he entered, Dragunov tried beating the hell out of him, and then tried closing the grate on, the garage grate, closing whatever it was that Dijak closed on him earlier, or a couple weeks ago. That was early in the night. And then Mitchell interviewed Dragunov in the locker room, where pretty much the men's locker room that wasn't involved in any of the show tonight was also in there with them. And then Dijak busted open the door during the interview, and then they went at it with the whole locker room, keeping them apart. And then that is what led to the final segment.
Oh, so, okay.
I only know because I did a recap.
Right. Nate, give me a four-word summary of this feud.
It's kind of interesting, sort of.
I can give you less than four words.
He gave me more.
I'll give you two.
I was contracting, you know. I don't know. I love Dragunov. I love Dijak. So I want to like this feud, and I want to get behind the little guy and the underdog and all that. But I feel like they've just kind of gone a little off the deep end with this. Like, the Dijak kind of kidnapping Dragunov a couple weeks ago. Now they're both basically attacking each other in the exact same way backstage, using the exact same garage door. It's just, it's not capturing me. I don't think it's capturing you guys. From the sounds of it anyway. I'm kind of looking forward to the match, and I'm also looking forward to this whole feud being over and having the two of them do other things. I'd like to see them both on my TV, but I'm kind of over this whole feud already.
Bruce, two-word recap.
Masochism overload.
All right.
Beautiful.
my forward recap of this feud is last man standing. No.
Hey, at least you'll get at least your fingers will get a break during the match every time you have to count to 7 or 8.
Hey, that is a heck of an upside. You know what? I'm not getting inundated with multi-person matches on Sunday. I love it. Okay. Let's go to your mid-show main event, Nathan Fraser versus Noam Dar. Vic hears people saying Fraser over and over. Dude just does not care. Gives no Fs. Mackenzie Mitchell, you know, she's punching down in every way in that relationship. Maybe she could just do him a solid and tell him how to pronounce Fraser, because she knows how. Alicia knows how. Book knows how. They're not blowing it. Anyway,
Booker T knows how and you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Booker T needs to be corrected a lot, usually on move names, which is odd, what with him being the wrestler. His excitement about the Doomsday Device that wasn't a Doomsday Device, that's one of my favorite things that's happened on commentary all year long. Nathan Fraser prepares for no match at the PLE by beating Noam Dar, who has a big one, in 12 minutes and 55 seconds with the Phoenix Splash after Dragon Lee shows up and Noam Dar distracts himself with Dragon Lee, and Fraser hits Phoenix Splash, as I stated a few seconds ago. So, a pretty good one. This one had a long split screen segment, but I liked what I saw. I don't know. I love the Heritage Cup. I'm also very, very glad that they decided to tell everyone the rules of the Heritage Cup, because I know how it's done, but I think there are a lot of people who don't. And I think it's a really cool thing, and I hope it gets over here. Nate.
Yes. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this match myself, because I haven't actually seen a Heritage Cup match. And as I have mentioned, I'm going to be in Lowell for Battleground, sitting 12th row. So I'm looking forward to seeing this actually in person. The entire concept and premise of the match is very interesting to me. You know, Kelly's explained it on the show before. They explained it tonight. These two are going to have, I think they're going to have an absolutely fantastic match. Noam Dar, I like the fact that they've kind of been reintroducing him to the NXT crowd over the last, handful of weeks, especially with this match here tonight. But he's just an annoying character. He can get under your skin a little bit, but he's fantastic in the ring. Dragon Lee, an absolutely phenomenal talent. I think they're going to have this is going to be a great match. I would like to see Dragon Lee come out on top here and actually take the Heritage Cup. I mean, Noam Dar, I don't know what the official count of how many days he's been champion, Heritage Cup champion is, but granted, you know, I'm sure a good majority of them have been, since NXT UK hasn't really been a thing. So it's not like he's really been defending it or anything, but I think it would be cool. Just a nice feather in the cap for Dragon Lee, especially where every other title is kind of held up right now. You know, the NXT title with Carmelo Hayes, Wes Lee, and, you know, his feuds going on with Gacy and Tyler Bate right now. So this is a nice way. You know, we don't have a breakout tournament. I don't know the last time we had a Dusty Cup. So why not? Heritage Cup, they're not doing anything with it. Give it to Dragon Lee. Give that, his the first feather in his cap. You can even tell the story about how he brought the Heritage Cup to NXT, because, you know, I don't know. Technically, I guess Noam Dar did, but, you know, whatever. NXT, wrestling's revisionist history anyway, so whatever. Definitely looking forward to this. I think this is one of the – between this and the main event, I think these are like the two matches I'm looking forward to the most.
Bruce?
Yeah, good match. Like you said, I'm really glad that they put the graph or the video out on what a British Rules match is, how the Heritage Cup match goes, what can end a match, how it's decided if it's a tie. All that was done well. You know, just a lot of the videos tonight were, you know, aside from the Dijak and Dragunov stuff, all the backstage segments pretty much were good. They're decent to good, and this is one of those that was very good in terms of the presentation of what you to expect. And then the match itself, definitely, you know, I didn't get the split screen because of the online player, but what I saw was a fantastic match. So Nate, since you've never seen one of these matches, I think having Noam Dar be the anchor is going to do wonders in terms of your first exposure to this. So a lot of that, the grappling and the quick counters and stuff like that, probably see more of that. And they're rounds, so it's going to be wrestled a bit differently. You just have to keep that in mind in terms of how they're going to pace out each thing and whatnot. So for me, what I liked about this match was the action. It allowed Frazer and Noam Dar to really both showcase what they do well, especially for those who don't remember Dar very much or only remember him from 205 Live or didn't really see him on NXT UK. He has a lot of precise striking. He's a very good technical wrestler. He can bust out subs at any time. One of the first notes I made on the match, though, was, did Noam Dar always have that much chest hair? Huh. So that was striking to me. He also, I think, when you go into the character talk, as Nate was talking about, sort of that smarmy, annoying character, how he cradles the Heritage Cup is just cringy in the best way possible for a pro wrestler. And I want to see what it does to him if he loses that on Sunday to Dragon Lee. Is he going to go through some kind of devolving into some sort of manic character, or will he use that and go in as fuel for something else? So for Dragon Lee, as Nate was saying, it's good stop off when everything else is occupied. And I think it would be a good way for Dragon Lee to still have matches on NXT without having to have him feel like he has to go 100% each match and do things that may, as we've seen in NXT recently, lead to a severe injury. So this could be a good way, especially with the rounds and usually with these matches getting more of a technical style, I think that will play well to the longevity of Dragon Lee in NXT. And looking forward to the match on Sunday. I do hope Dragon Lee wins, but with Dar being so associated with it, I would not be surprised if they decide to have him continue with it, continue being I guess the heel version of R-Truth, the 24/7 title. Even though this is better than 24/7, I'm just trying to think of a comparison that might work. If you play WWE 2K23 and you play the male storyline in my ride, and it's like Sami Zayn and IC title, so things like that. Gonna be a good match. Just gonna be a lot different from what y'all are used to, and from any other of the other matches on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that Dar wins this just because I can't even figure out what a Dragon Lee title reign looks like. It's such a weird thing to do with him that I just can't imagine him going over here. But assuming he doesn't, how do they make that work? It could be on the draw. Not that they usually like to do that at a PLE, but if Dar runs away long enough to force a draw, maybe that works. You can call us at 515-605-9345, and somebody has done just that. Let me go ahead and put Brad on the show and see what he's thinking about tonight. I think this thing is unmuting him. If it has done so, let's say hey.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How you doing, Brad? Good to hear from you. And on this go-home show, what did you think?
Yeah. First of all, I don't want to be a negative Nelly, but, I feel like, and I guess this is normal to feel after a draft, but I feel like NXT is really lacking, star power right now. I just, Do you guys feel, this is more of an emotional poll than an actual, like, real, you know, analysis of anything, but do you guys feel like the show, because Grayson's missing and because of, you know, maybe like the indies and the, you know, the, just the people that seem to not be there, Zoe Stark, whatever it is, I don't know what I'm really missing exactly, but it just feels like something is missing. Maybe it's because I'm such a big Grayson Waller fan and I really loved him on this show and the crowd reaction when he would come in. It just seems like there's not as much there right now for them to work with, and they're throwing a lot of stuff against the wall. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I will say that's definitely a fair thought. I had not thought it maybe to that degree, but this is the time of year where that churn happened a lot in early NXT. In Black and Gold, it didn't necessarily all the time because Vince didn't know how to use a lot of those guys and never was going to call them up ever. But in this version of NXT, the plan is to move these people up. And I think that we will see that, and more, especially with the draft just happening, this was going to be when they really saw that. It definitely seems like they're throwing a lot at the wall. I think that's the intent, to see what they have with these people, to see how they react to these spots. I think this week was even more so than normal because a lot of the bigger stars in the brand weren't actually in matches this week. They were promoting the show in other ways. I certainly get what you're saying with Waller specifically because he brought such an air of, let's say, largeness to the
confidence.
Show.
He brought like the star power, baby.
An air of finished product? Whatever you want to say, he did legitimize things in a lot of ways. Now, you've got Carmelo doing that. Braun kind of does it. But they weren't really on this episode all that much. I think that they're working toward seeing that other people can do that. Bruce, what do you think?
So I think what's being lost here is that it's a developmental developmental brand, which technically is not supposed to be having stars. It's supposed to be creating the future stars. So I think if we take that perspective, then what you feel right now, especially so the people you mentioned, especially Grayson Waller, they became a star in NXT, and it's not a surprise that they are now not on NXT because the whole function of NXT is to develop the future stars for Raw and SmackDown. So I think if you just look at it from that perspective, then it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it's basically like NXT is cyclical in that way, you know, because you've got the, you know, like when you think about like, you know, when you had like the Four Horsewomen and Finn Balor and kind of the Black and Gold era, if you will. You know, you'd have all of those stars kind of coming in. These unknown people, I guess, for the most part, coming in, becoming stars in NXT. Then they go up to the main roster. And then we've always gone through periods in NXT where it does feel like the star power is a little bit lacking because it's that developmental show, like Bruce just said. And then, you know, new stars start to become made and, you know, we end up coming into a new era of NXT and, it's very cyclical in that way. Wrestling's cyclical in general, but I feel like NXT is on a even faster cycle than that because, you know, the roster is such a revolving door, more so than I think most territories.
Yes, indeed. Brad, what else do you have?
Yeah, no, thanks for that, guys. And I guess in a complete contradiction to what I just said, Tiffany Stratton, what can you say? I mean, she looks so great in the ring. I mean, she really has a charisma that I think is, I'm talking about like top of the main roster. Like she could main event, she could have main evented Raw last night. Like honestly, like she could be top of the card for a pay-per-view, like on the main roster. Like I just think she is so charismatic. And when you see her, there's just something that says, this is a star, and it's not the flashing lights, and it's not the flashing cameras, and it's not even necessarily the way that she looks, although she is pretty and attractive and all that. It's not even that. It's just that she just makes you care about what she's doing. And that's a trait in wrestling that I find to be one of the most important things, like someone that just makes you care about their matches and what they're doing. And I think that she already has that, and I can't imagine how much better it's going to be. So when I saw her against Roxanne tonight, the only reason I'm kind of bringing this up is that I think Roxanne is very good, and I do think she will be a pillar of the main roster when she does get up there going forward. And she's obviously a pillar of NXT right now, but I think Tiffany will end up moving past her in the end. I think Tiffany will be the top of the card, and I think she will be the mid to the upper part of the card in the women's division. And I just want to get your thoughts on how you guys think she looks, and obviously the win tonight, and specifically as it relates to the matchup against Lyra, because I kind of was surprised it wasn't Cora Jade. I really was against Tiffany. And I want your thoughts on Tiffany, and then I guess that matchup with Lyra at the pay-per-view coming up on Sunday.
So we covered the semifinals earlier. I think that we're all probably seeing the same things happening. They did the injury angle to give Lyra an out. Lyra will go on to continue feuding with Cora Jade, getting them both some TV time there. And it certainly seems like Tiffany's going to anchor this division. You will get no argument from me about how good Tiffany is and became in such a short amount of time. I have watched NXT since the very beginning. I would say she is one of the five or six fastest improving wrestlers they've ever put on TV. Some of the others would be like Bayley, Alexa Bliss. Those two come to mind as ones that were extremely fast from their first kind of matches to being pretty good. Bayley's first one wasn't too bad, but she got very good very quick, and Alexa just took to it like a horse to water. So plateaued at the top.
That's true, but I'm talking about in-ring, but yay.
Right. I think that Tiffany is going to be the biggest star of the women that are in NXT right now on the main roster, and I don't think it's going to be close. I don't see anyone, unless they're like way in the background now and I'm forgetting about them, I don't see anyone who can be close. If they hit all the right moves with someone like Gigi Dolin, I think it can happen.
Dante Chen.
Yes, indeed. Roxy's good, but I think that she will be a good, I don't want to say gatekeeper, but like
I think she's going to be Natalia.
Yeah, I could see that. And she's kind of plateaued on the mic, it feels like. They're giving her a lot of chances, and it kind of keeps coming off at the same level. I think Stratton's going to be near the top. And this is coming from someone who, when they first put her on TV, I'm like, they just fired Frankie Monet. What's the point if they were just going to try to make
full against this?
A Frankie Monet. And it was probably only 3 months later. I'm like, okay, she's pretty good. And now I can't imagine the heel side of the ledger without her. The only thing that I think is wrong with her winning this tournament is that nobody is more main roster ready, other than maybe Carmelo Hayes, on this brand. She's really, really incredible, and I cannot wait to see what the next step is, Bruce.
Yeah, so I've been singing Tiffany Stratton's praises since her debut vignette, and of course it all came down to what was happening in the ring. And when it came to her first match, yes, very green, but I saw in her what I saw when I saw Bianca Belair's first match with NXT, like all the potential in the world, right? And her growth, as you said, has been nothing short of amazing. And so quick, and each time she gets in the ring, she gets better and better, which is why, to me, the whole concept that Cora Jade is ahead of her, just because I don't think Cora Jade has improved, not just at nearly at the same pace, but I think she has also plateaued a little bit when it comes to in the ring. And maybe it's just that these matches with Valkyria coloring my opinion of that, but it just seems to not be going as great with Jade as it has been with Strat. So for me, no argument against her. She obviously understands what she needs to do to not just make a lot of money in this business, but to be thought of as one of the best and successful when moving forward. When it comes, I was gonna add real quick. So when it comes to star power in the future, look, I'm just gonna be crass about it. It's hard to not be higher than a pretty white girl in this country. So she got it going for her.
All right, Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so there is nothing that I do not disagree with that you guys just said. I'm looking up and down the women's roster right now, and I mean, there is. The only one that stands out to me as maybe a potential, a potential star, maybe in, is Sol Ruka, and even then, I feel like that's like I'm stretching to just find somebody. I think we, you know, NXT has found something with Tiffany Stratton. She is definitely going to go far. I could definitely see her. I hate saying like the next Charlotte, but like kind of in that mold, obviously, you know, pretty blonde, but kind of almost a similar character in a way. Very dismissive of others and very confident of themselves. So I could certainly see that going a long way, especially, you know, once Charlotte, I mean, I'm not saying she's anywhere close to winding down her career, but, I'm sure eventually at some point that'll happen. That's kind of at least my thoughts that haven't already been talked about.
A similar character to Charlotte, but I dare say already more clearly defined than Charlotte. Yes. Who?
Because she's not just Ric Flair's daughter.
Yes. And Charlotte has vacillated between face and heel so much.
Well, that's the one thing we haven't seen with Stratton. Is she going to be able to play a face? And, I mean, does she even need to play a face? But, I mean, eventually, the big money in the wrestler being a face. So we haven't seen that at NXT. And I wonder if they're holding her down to see if she can get a face run and how that goes before they move her to Raw or SmackDown.
Yes, and, you know, that would make sense. I mean, all these people who thought Bron Breakker should be a face were like, well, maybe we should try him as a heel. And it's like, oh, they finally thought of the most obvious thing in the world. Good for them. So maybe they'll do that. I don't see it, but Sami Zayn is both one of the best baby faces and one of the best heels in the world. So it can happen. Brad, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. The only other person that, and I know you guys know, she's nowhere near as where Tiffany is in the ring, and I think, you know, Bruce, you brought it up. I think Cora Jade has a lot of gravitas. I personally do. When I see her on the screen, it makes me want to watch her. I kind of feel like, especially when she was a babyface, like she had more of like almost like an AJ Lee-ish type of vibe. I don't know why. Like, she doesn't look similar to her, but I don't know, maybe it's just like the backwards hat thing and, you know, running around or whatever, but I feel like Cora Jade can be someone that people get really drawn to as she continues to grow and get better, hopefully. And I like a lot of what she does, and I kind of missed her when she was gone. And I think she's, to me, the second most appealing person on the roster, but in terms of the women, but that's just me. But I guess that's it. I mean, I guess one more question for you guys, and this might be, a cultural thing or whatever. Maybe it's not even appropriate to bring up, but do you guys find that, like, it's harder to get invested in wrestlers like, I know you guys like Dragon Lee. I'm not saying maybe like a Dragon Lee or an Axiom, because you can't see the emotion on their faces, and you can't see the look in their eyes when, you know, someone just picked out of a pinfall and they're surprised or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just find it hard when I watch Dragon Lee. I'm like, he's awesome in the ring. Like, I can see it. He's amazing. Amazing. Like, almost like one of the most sophisticated wrestlers you could possibly have in NXT already. I know he has experience elsewhere. But my point is, like, I find it hard to get invested because of the mask. And I kind of feel the same way about Axiom. Do you guys ever feel like that? I mean, this is, I guess, more of a general wrestling question. And I know it's a cultural thing with Lucha Libre and whatever, but I mean, do you think it serves them well to wear the mask? And do you think it's, I mean, do you think it is harder to, I guess, for the audience to embrace a wrestler with a mask rather than one without? Because I feel like it's, you know, with Axiom especially and Dragon Lee, it's just so, those are two of their bigger male stars right now. And just seeing them in the mask, I don't know. I want your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good, very fair question. I do think that in general, that will be a stumbling block that a lot of American fans have. It depends on what else you do with it, because Rey Mysterio is masked, but it's showing enough of his face, and they always did something with, like, the crazy contacts that he did. Not that he's doing them all the time anymore, but we got a lot of expressiveness over the years with Ray, even though in WWE we never saw his face, we did in WCW. So yeah, I watch a lot of wrestling from around the world, and the wrestling I watch most is New Japan, and there's like six or eight masked guys there, so I'm kind of used to it. But if you're doing it there, you do have to. You have to do something to make yourself stand out. You have to be able to show your emotion in another way. Of the guys who are masked all the time in New Japan, I would say that the one who comes off the best is probably El Desperado. Sorry, it was literally the clanging that was driving me crazy. I don't know where it's coming from. It was probably El Desperado. So he has a way of, even though he is masked and he's got black paint around his eyes, so you don't even see that part of his face, and around his mouth, and he's got like his lips are made to be skull lips. They have him show it with. Well, they have him show it. He knows how to show it with his body. He's really, really good at that. And I will say he's quite a bit better than Dragon Lee at it. I have seen a lot of Dragon Lee matches because he worked a number of tours for New Japan a few years back. And so I've seen quite a bit of his work. And then, of course, we knew Axiom's face as a kid. And I think because he worked for a long time using his face, it might be tougher for him to remember that he's got to make that change. Whereas Desperado, he's been doing the mask ever since he came back from excursion. He was not under a mask as a young lion, but then he was. So I think that can be tough for them, but I mean, it's a high degree of difficulty. They have to learn a way to convey the emotion they would otherwise. Being surprised that somebody kicked out, I'm glad we don't see one more person do that, because I hate the way that people are shocked that someone kicked out of a Falcon Arrow, a move that has not pinned anyone in years. So that doesn't bug me. But I hope that someone is getting in Dragon Lee's ear about that, because he is awesome. But we'll need to see that emotion in the ring if he's going to take the next step. Bruce.
Can you go with Nate first on this one? And I'll put my thoughts in after.
I can do that.
Sure. So okay. I totally agree with what Kelly was saying in terms of like the mainstream audience and not being able and a lot of people kind of seeing or having trouble connecting with masked wrestlers. I mean, you think about it. Rey Mysterio is really one of, in terms of mainstream WWE, Rey Mysterio is really one of the only ones. You've also got Kane, you know, Kane, but Kane also unmasked in what, 2003 it was, and spent a lot of his career unmasked. And then even when he remasked, he still spent a lot of his career unmasked. But even then, Kane, like when he was the, you know, the big red monster and, you know, before he unmasked, he was able to convey a lot of emotion and, well, not necessarily emotion, but a lot of just through body language. And you could kind of understand, you know, what he was doing and going through and all of that. It's an art form. It's like there's huge degree of difficulty to it, as Kelly said. But it, like, in is like my perspective, I love masked wrestlers. Always have. They remind me of superheroes. And that's one of the reasons that I got into wrestling as a kid. Not necessarily for masked wrestlers. Oddly enough, what got me into wrestling as a kid was seeing Billy Gunn in a match. I don't even remember who he was in a match against, but I just was scrolling through and I watching TV and I was like, who's this? And I was like, oh, that's cool. And I just kept watching Raw and here I am now. But I don't know how I started talking about that. But yeah, they, you know, masked wrestlers remind me of superheroes. And I think that kind of resonates, especially with a lot of the younger kids, younger audience. Yeah, they see the mask and it you know, it does, or just reminds them like of a superhero and it's somebody that they can get behind. But I don't know, you know, WWE doesn't necessarily know what to do with masked wrestlers. They kind of see them as like, okay, well, we have a masked wrestler on our roster. So boom, there's a check, you know? And they've always been looking for like the next Rey Mysterio with like Sin Cara, Kalisto, and the list goes on. So it's definitely going to be a hard thing for Axiom and Dragon Lee to overcome to become, if those characters are destined to be main event, which I don't think they are, but let's just say they were. If they were destined to be main event, and that was the plan for those characters, I do think they would have, you know, difficulty getting over with the fans because of, you know, you can't see the expression on their face. Although I think there would be a small subset of fans like myself that would be all for it.
Bruce?
All right, so I'm going to speak as presumably, and correct me if I'm wrong, the only person in this conversation who is of color. So, for me,
I mean, I'm a color, but it's white.
That was a terrible joke. So
I know. I just had to say something dumb.
In terms of the general discussion about mass wrestlers, the U.S., I think it's just more general xenophobia than anything that makes people not as receptive to mass wrestlers if they're not, you know, U.S. wrestlers or anything like that. So one thing about Rey Mysterio is he's at least from San Diego to a lot of people. So that helps make up for some other things. It also helps that he's a really good wrestler. But for me, I don't see any issues with masked wrestlers. Part of that is, like Kelly, I have watched Japanese wrestlers for a long time. My first favorite as a kid was Ultimo Dragon, and he's always had a mask. For me, I think part of this, too, is I've always looked at the eyes more so than the mouth, I guess, for the reactions, because I feel like the eyes tell more of a story than just, you know, facial reactions do help. But I think, you know, the two people you brought up, I think Axiom probably wasn't the best example to use because he gained more charisma once he put the mask on than when he had the mask off as a kid. With Dragon Lee, you see the mouth and the eyes, so to me, there's no issue there. With a lot of masked wrestlers, to me, it's fine. I just feel like, again, if anything, there's just a hesitancy, and I think it has more to do with the fact that, when I say that the xenophobia, I don't mean like it's necessarily overt. It could just be, wow, we don't see this here, so I'm going to be wary of it. And, oh, it only worked with this person in my mind, so I'm only going to say it works with that person or something like that. So for me, I think the mass discussion, you know, I understand what you and Brad are saying, Kelly, but I also think that for the most part, it's another stupid thing that people bring up to try and, I'm not saying you're stupid, I'm just saying in general, when it comes to discussions about, oh, this wrestler can't get over, this wrestler should get over, blah, blah, blah. I feel like the mask issue is something that really doesn't, it shouldn't be an issue if they want to, if a mask is being worn or not. Because again, for you know, an example that you want the mask off, you have the mask on with Axiom, that makes them better. For me, it just comes down to if the mask is what's holding you back, then why is that one thing the thing that's making you hold back when everything else is so good about them to you? So that's the question I would ask about myself if I'm sitting here with wrestlers and thinking, man, if it was just wasn't for the mask, I think they'd be fine. I feel like there's more to it than just that.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you because the mask doesn't hold me back at all. I mean, a lot of my favorite wrestlers are masked. And,
yeah, I almost feel like
probably my favorite. Ray was my favorite at the time when he was being really, really pushed. And I get that his push kind of restarted, but at the time he was really being pushed.
And I kind of feel like the you know, a mask is also it's it gives a character this uniqueness that nobody else has. Yeah, exactly. You know, you can you know, you think Rey Mysterio, you know what the mask looks like. You know, you think Jushin Liger, you know what the mask looks like.
To put it another way, like, can you imagine Sting without face paint? I mean, we've all seen him with it, but can you imagine Sting wrestling without face paint, or Darby Allin right now wrestling without face paint? Or if you want to go back to some abhorrent people like Ultimate Warrior without face paint, or Hawk and Animal without face paint, like it's a trait that defines characters in an industry where having a defining trait really helps you get far.
Yeah. With or without face paint, Sting really couldn't deliver a line, which is why, which is why The Crow worked so well for him. Only thing he had to do to be the most popular wrestler in the world was not wrestle and not talk. All right, Tony D. He was detained by some cops. And I got to tell you, if every cop was as bad at line delivery as these two guys, they'd never force a confession.
The second dude was so bad.
They were painful. And I thought the second dude had it in the bag. But then in the second scene, the first dude was shoving him off. Come on, let's go. I was like, I get that they didn't write any more lines, but you don't have to fill every quarter second. Yikes. They're not being subtle with what is potentially a red herring. They showed Stax on the phone later on. Stax went out to save the Creed brothers. And to save us from the scene that the Creed brothers were having with Gallus, thank you for your sacrifice, Stax. So we've got, I don't know, and how does Luca Crucifino fit into all this? Because his name, you know, vaguely Italian, I suppose. It's the most Italian name that ever Italian.
Apparently he's a lawyer.
Say vaguely.
Yeah,
like,
Luca is a lawyer, and Tony D's going to need one real soon. So there you go. And Luca is a name that that is in The Godfather. And you know that the guys making these decisions in there are like, well, we need an Italian name. What's the only Italian movie you've ever watched? The Godfather. Oh, yeah. There's a Luca Brasi, Sleeps with the Fishes. So, yeah, we got Luca Crucifino. And if every lawyer delivered lines like him, yada, yada, yada. I will say his look, you know, between the rooftop. Okay, he's a real estate agent in a porn film. Guys, he just is. That's what he is. Goes in, and you see the tattoos, and you're like, I already don't buy this. Like, why are his arms showing like that? Okay, so.
I said he was Constable Corbin and cut off.
Oh, God.
So Luca Crucifino wins. He defeats Von Wagner by disqualification in 238 when Von beats him in the ropes so badly he has to give up. He distracts himself with a baby photo. That's a new one. So on the saga with our friends from the boot-shaped country, Bruce.
Yes. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's Stax, the informant. And then later they made it seem like Gallus in their one of the worst segments I can remember in NXT ever. And they kind of alluded that they might have been the ones, but they might have just been taking credit for something that Sex did with the red herring and the telephone and everything that you were talking about. And it would kind of make sense. Now, of course, what's the word I'm looking for? The dark horse in all of this is that it'd be Two Dimes coming back to haunt D'Angelo for offing him earlier, but I don't think his 1 year has been up, and I think he is signed to AEW, so that wouldn't be the case. But it'd be kind of funny if that did happen. But like you said, the acting for the two cops, they had to be the two from the vignette last week where we didn't see their heads because it was a white guy and a black guy with tattoos, and there was a white guy and a black guy with tattoos. So, I mean, yeah, it was – the second guy came in, and he delivered his lines so deadpan. I don't know if he knew that they were recording, or like maybe he was going through rehearsal or something, because it was really bad. But then you get to Crucifino and Wagner and Mr. Stone and everything, and look, if Crucifino's going to be a body, that's cool. The thing that stuck out to me, though, during this match was, one, Von Wagner got a Wagner chant from the crowd, so that had to be the first time ever. But two, when Crucifino was on offense, I felt engaged with the match. When Wagner was on offense, I was bored as hell. So if he's going to be a body, then he might be another big body hobby type that gets a lot of movement and sells for other people to put them over. And then did you bring up, since you brought up the Creed and Gallus, did you discuss that entire situation too?
Absolutely. Everything that involved an Italian guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the worst segments was Gallus and the Creed, and just to give you an idea, they had that dumb green light over the part of Gallus's in-ring promo that they walk out to, so it was really kind of glaring on the eyes. But I guess they set up the tag team championship match, even though it seemed like a six-man, and Stax later on said, we should come to an agreement where I help you all out on Sunday. They said, nah, they got it. And Stax said, no hard feelings, but this is going to come into play somehow on Sunday. Except, I don't know. Julia said, you'll get the first shot if we win, but I do have a feeling that Stax might actually take it personally if they refused and cost him the match. So we'll see what happens there. All I know is Tony D'Angelo somehow has been more engaging doing all this, I think because of how good his acting is compared to them, even though it's over the top, to the cops and stuff, that I'm not – how do I put this? I think he's gotten better in the ring, but I'm not disappointed he's not on the card for something.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, he was – I used to dread all his appearances, and now I really want to see where this is headed. Like, I'm really very interested in it. Nate?
Yeah. No, so am I. I mean, Tony, I've gone on a roller coaster with Tony D'Angelo. When he first debuted, I was all about the gimmick. I mean, I'm even with the last name Lindbergh, I'm mostly Italian. So I love like The Godfather, Goodfellas, like, you know, old mob movies and stuff. So like I dug the character, like super stereotypical, but like, I don't know. I thought the character was cool. Then, you know, I mean, he became, you know, the leader over Legado del Fantasma, and, you know, he had this big faction, and I was like, all right, this is pretty sweet. And then he kind of fell off the face of the planet, and, you know, now just him and Stax, and he's gone all over the place. He lost me for quite a while. I'm back, and I really like this angle that he has. You know, I mean, we've seen him off a few people now, supposedly, right? So to kind of, and we've been like, all right, hey, where are the cops for this? Like, they're broadcasting these supposed murders on like national TV, right? So to kind of see them actually play into that a little bit, I like it. You know, and he's getting a bit of his, you know, legal comeuppance here. You know, it's entertaining. He's, you know, I completely agree with you guys. He's not like super great in the ring. He's very, very bland in the ring. You know, I think at like an indie show, you know, a small little indie show or something like that, I think he'd be one of the better dudes on the card. But in NXT, you know, he doesn't stand out with his in-ring work. It's his character work, like you guys are saying, absolutely makes him stand out. His acting ability, yes, over the top, but again, in NXT, it's definitely, he's definitely one of the better actors in NXT. So I think, you know, keeping him kind of out of the ring right now, you know, maybe let him hone his ability in Performance Center or even on Level Up or something like that. You know, maybe have some sort of a big, I mean, I guess Level Up is really for undercard talent. If they have a big match, you know, Tony D'Angelo versus somebody, but regardless, like, let him hone his craft a little bit more, keep him off TV in terms of like in-ring work, but let him entertain us with segments like this. Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this all pans out. And I have a feeling we're going to wind up seeing Luca get involved with, you know, bailing Tony D'Angelo out of jail or something like that. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. You know, why introduce this character as a, you know, a lawyer type, and then, you know, and now you've got Tony D'Angelo in legal, you know, potential legal troubles. It just makes sense that that's going to happen. And the fact that they crossed paths tonight, I feel like that's some foreshadowing there. So I don't even want to talk about Gallus and the Creed. So we're just going to move on.
The fact that the police saw this footage of the murder of Two Dimes and are investigating it, the fact that they investigated because of that is believable. The fact that they didn't bother to investigate it for 10, 11 months, also pretty believable. So, I like what they're
especially
doing.
Especially in Florida.
Here you go. We got Tyler Bate versus Eddie Thorpe. Bate wins at 5:03 with the Tyler Driver 97. Tyler Bate heading toward a match with Wes Lee, where Wes Lee is really overreacting to Tyler Bate wanting a match. But if he doesn't, then the feud doesn't work. So I get it. I do really like what they're doing with Wes Lee saying, hey, I can trust Joe Gacy. I know he's against me. That part of it, I really, really like. I think that as weird as this triple threat is, I kind of like the dynamic just because of that weirdness. Now, will the match deliver? That is an altogether different question. Depends on the percentage of Joe Gacy, I guess. Hank Walker defeats Tank Ledger in 2:41 with a crossbody. Braun Breaker beats them both down because why the hell not? Dabakato beats Axiom at 1:56. Reggie makes the save. Axiom doesn't trust him yet, but maybe he should. My favorite thing here, Vic saying he didn't know that it was Reggie, and Booker treating him like he's the biggest idiot in the world for not knowing.
So funny.
Even though Booker himself never said that it was Reggie, I thought it was very funny that that he treated Vic like a big buffoon here.
Vic is a big buffoon.
He sure is.
Yeah,
so
he is.
These three matches, if you have any quick thoughts, Nathaniel.
All right, so let's go. I'm going to talk about I'm going to go to Bate and Thorpe last. So Axiom versus Dabakato, this was as I put in the hits and misses, it existed. It was really just to kind of put Axiom and Reggie in the ring together again. I was surprised Axiom got as much offense as he did on Dabakato, considering the size difference and everything like that. But yeah, whatever is what it is. I don't feel like Dabakato is really going to be, you know, any higher up on the card than he probably already is. So unless he gets some sort of massive push at some point, Reggie and Axiom basically within the next, I don't know, let's say 2 to 6 weeks, they're going to be a tag team. What was the other match we were talking about? Hank and Tank. So I liked this match. It was short. It was kind of comedic and kind of dumb, but like whatever. I was cool with it. It was really kind of two tag. I'm assuming they're a tag team now. You know, two tag team partners, kind of just seeing who's friendly competition type of thing. But it was a comedic match. I dug this. You know, it's I'm invested in these, in both of these characters already. You know, like I think I mentioned either last week or the week before, they kind of remind me of Heavy Machinery in a way. You know, not 100%, you know, because it's not like you've got like, you know, Tucker and then the crazy weird Otis, but, you know, they're kind of both a little Tucker and Otis at the same time, I think. But I kind of get Heavy Machinery vibes from them, and I feel like there's something there. And I'm really curious to see what happens with the two of them as this tag team grows. Again, I don't think they're going to be, you know, either one of them is going to be, you know, main event level material, but I think they're going to certainly be entertaining mid-card potential comedic characters, at least at this stage in the game. You know, heel turn maybe at some point down the road, and, you know, we'll see where that goes, but at least where they are right now, that's what I see for them. The last thing I'll talk about then is Tyler Bate and Eddie Thorpe. So I liked the match. I liked the match, but I don't understand the finish. Now, after the match, you had Gacy attack both Bate and Lee. Why didn't they have Gacy attack during the match and cost Bate the match? You have Bate go over clean here, which over Eddie Thorpe. Now they just bring Eddie Thorpe in as, you know, they kind of put a little bit of pomp and circumstance around his name, and they made him kind of seem like a bit of a big deal. And then we didn't really hear much about him. You know, he was kind of in some background. He was in some vignettes, kind of like in the background and stuff. But he hasn't really done a whole heck of a lot since his debut. And now we see him lose clean to Tyler Bate in an angle where he, or in a match where he's not involved in the story and that angle that's kind of surrounding that match. I thought that was just kind of weird. The way that I thought this match was going to go down was we were going to see either Wes Lee, who was sitting, you know, at the announce table, you know, and as Kelly said, you know, he's a little bit, he's overreacting and he seems almost a little paranoid. Like, I thought it was a paranoid decision for him to come out and sit there to watch Tyler Bate's match because he doesn't trust him. You know, that was the way I even put that in the hits and misses. Like, it seemed like he was a little paranoid. So I thought either Wes Lee or Joe Gacy were going to interfere, cost Bate the title. Eddie Thorpe gets the win, gives him a little bit more shine as he's the new guy, and, you know, and then they could kind of build him up a bit more. But instead he gets, you know, beat cleanly. And maybe there's something I'm missing. It just seemed like a missed opportunity to me. And they could have still gotten to essentially the exact same thing with Joe Gacy taking out Wes Lee and Tyler Bate if he was to interfere in the middle of the match without, I hate using the term sacrificing because it's such a overused term, but it's the only thing I can think of, without sacrificing Eddie Thorpe. So that was kind of like my big gripe of the night. Other than that, I enjoyed the match. I mean, it was short, but you know, what we did see out of Bate and Thorpe was fun. But yeah, other than that, that, you know, the finish for me was a little weird. It kind of makes me wonder if they have lost some luster on Thorpe.
I don't think so. I like Eddie quite a bit from his relatively brief time in New Japan, but I'm also a fan of getting that undefeated streak out of the way, Bruce.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Nate. I guess I'll just touch on this first since we're talking about it, but I actually don't have an issue with how this played out. And the main thing is neither Gacy nor Lee were on the card tonight to wrestle. Only Bate was, and you have to build at least one person up as a legitimate threat leading into Sunday, and with the only one person wrestling, you have to make sure they get the victory. And he got a clean victory here, but in that clean victory, it was a pretty 50-50 match. Thorpe got a lot of offense, and the first minute or two was just a lot of grappling and reversing and pins, and, you know, Thorpe was getting the better at some points. I think they did a really good job here of showcasing what Thorpe does well in the ring, what we should expect to see from him. And when you're looking at the kind of the pecking order of the men's division, I mean, I think it's clear that Tyler Bate is ahead of Eddie Thorpe. And I have high hopes for Eddie Thorpe. I really like him. I liked him when he was in New Japan as well. So for me, this match was basically there both to, you know, Thorpe got over in defeat, but because Bate was the only person scheduled for a match tonight, maybe they should have scheduled Gaethje instead against someone else. But what you had here is you still need to build something for Sunday for that match outside of, you know, I guess Wesley being on the commentary booth. So, and how that ending, how the angle played out, I think was also key because Gaethje sensed Lee coming, dodge, which caused Lee to hit Bate. Then that set them up to get hit by the upside down. And then during the commercial break, they showed that Lee and Bate got into a big argument about what happened. And so for me, did here with this match and the post-match angle, again, to me, hit all the right buttons. And I don't have any concerns about Thorpe right now. He just came in. He's had some good victories, but he's also had defeats against people that at this point in his NXT career probably should be. The thing, when you think about him and Dragon Lee, they kind of came in around the same time. The difference is Dragon Lee came hyped in as an international superstar, whereas Eddie Thorpe came in, one, not carrying his name that he had in New Japan, and two, just with the debut vignettes you get with most every NXT wrestler. So I think there's a difference there that I'm just using them because they came in around the same time, but they were brought in specific placing in the men's division as to where they rank in terms of the title picture. So just in terms of what you were talking about with this, I feel like, at least for me, it's a bit of an overreaction because I think it served the purpose they needed it to serve for tonight. Now, maybe in the long run, this might serve as that point that we look back and say Nate was right. But I do feel like to get to that point, it's a long ways away. So I would just pull back a little bit because I liked what I saw in the match from both men, and I didn't have any qualms. Look, Thorpe countered the Tower Driver 97 the first time, and the rebound lariat, and it's only the second time when he got hit with the rebound lariat and the Tower Driver that he got pinned. So to me, it was all in all a great match, and I think it functioned as it needed to.
All right, I have set a calendar reminder for 2 months out to revisit the status of Eddie Thorpe, just because I want to hear potentially somebody say I was right.
I think 2 months is too short, but going to Axiom and Dabakato, I was a little more higher on it than Nate was. I feel like they used that under 2 minutes really to highlight just the quickness and skills of Axiom as opposed to the lumbering strength of Dabakato. When Reggie made the save, I think Dabakato misjudged how close he was to the ropes because Reggie was nowhere near hitting Dabakato with the somersault kick. So there was that. But like Nate said, I wrote in my report, looks like we got a new tag team coming with Axiom and with Reggie. It's going to be one of those kind of like we saw with Sheamus and Cesaro. There's another one Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, where it starts out a little bit. I don't trust you, and then eventually they become a tag team. And then with Hank and Tank, to me, the story of the match wasn't the match. It was Booker T's commentary. He was so adamantly against this match. He said, this is not what you should do to be a successful tag team. I would never have thought of doing this with my brother or with Goldust, whoever. Like, I have a feeling that Booker – okay, I do get a sense that Booker T goes off script, but I feel like this part was something that is – being said specifically because it's going to come back to bite these two in the ass. I have a feeling that Riggs and Jensen did that to set those two up. I feel like it worked for Briggs and Jensen because they had a legitimate thing to fight over, which was Jensen turning on them for Kiana James when all signs pointed to him, like not, he shouldn't be doing that. This was just because they got the idea in their head from those two. And so I'm wondering if we're going to slowly start getting a Briggs and Jensen heel turn and leading to that sort of dissension between Hank and Tank. Again, to me, the commentary from Booker T was the big story of the actual match.
You know, Briggs, Jensen, and Henley are on TV so much, it really was striking that they weren't mm-hmm. on this episode at all.
Wow,
I would say
you're right.
She was someone that I actually thought of earlier with the question because she has something. I just don't know if she'll fully get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I vacillate on her, too. I will say on Eddie Thorpe, if this was going to be the beginning of, like, losing luster and de-emphasis, He would not have gotten his full awesome entrance, and he would not have gone 5:03. This was the third longest match on the show. If he was going to be de-emphasized, they would have either not have him on TV at all or just flattened him out there, just flattened him out there. But his was the third longest of the four matches. So that weren't the deal. Braun and Mello got some hype. Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. This match is going to be a weaponized cage match. One of the worst, lamest. Oh, gosh. It's going to be dumb. But it's like a PLE level match, but it's not being put on the PLE. This is like their biggest blood feud, and they can't trust it to be on the big show. It's crazy. It's nice that we have a main event for next week, but yeah, this is the second time in a row that they got passed over for that spot.
Ooh, I don't know if it made a event next week.
That's true. It's got to do one or the other because the cage always either opens or closes because of the amount of time it takes to raise and lower. Let's go to our email from Kevin Katanning. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I'm not sure how you all feel, but this battleground card is reminiscent of some takeovers, in my opinion. Titles are on the line. Grudge matches will play out, and I'm sure several surprises are in store. That said, which match are you most looking forward to for Battleground and why? Secondly, where do you all stand on Von Wagner? No matter what they do with Stone's presentation and or Von's opponents, he seems to fall flat. Has the ship sailed, or am I missing something? Thanks, as always. Listen to 8YB and go VIP. Office hours are now over. Kevin P. Katanning, PhD. I'm psyched for this. I'm psyched for this show a lot. They've done a really good job of promoting just about everything that's on it. The one I'm most excited about is the main event, which is not always the case at all on this show. I'm psyched about the Heritage Cup also, but there's something to like in everything in the way that they've been promoted. The main event, I think the new look at these two, I think that's probably the most exciting part of it. On Von Wagner, we've said it all, so I will only say this. Cal Bloom has been in that company for like 6 or 7 years. They have been trying to make him happen for a long time. He is technically on both Raw and SmackDown, and he is factually not on either of them. He's having a storyline about one of his baby photos on NXT. I don't know what you say to that, Bruce.
Yeah. So when it comes to Von Wagner, that ship sailed 5 years ago. It just has never worked. And because we got on Von Wagner, I forgot what the first part. Oh, Battleground. Yes. So 6 matches on the card. Generally, takeovers would have five matches. So this is right in that. But as you know, Kevin was saying, you were saying, there's a legitimate reason for each of these to happen at Battleground, whether it's for a title, a feud ender. I think the only multi-person match is a North American Championship match. I mean, aside from the Tag Team Championship match, of course. Either of the three of us will have the answer to this, but has the North American Championship ever been defended on a PLE or a takeover in a singles match?
I would say probably.
Lee versus Dijakovic.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay. Well, it just feels like every North American Championship match on a PLE or a takeover is always multi-person, which can get very tiresome when you have to do the report. But
yeah.
I think, as you were saying, the main event I'm really hyped for this this time around, as opposed to Stand and Deliver, which, I mean, I was still hyped for it, but I think the predictability of the outcome, which was the right outcome, also took a bit away from from what could have been, I guess. But then looking at Sunday, if they do it right, I'm excited to see the crowning of Tiffany Stratton. And then the British Rounds match, Heritage Cup match, I think it's going to be a show stealer. One of those sleepers that people really don't think is going to do well. And then once they start getting into it, it's going to be one of those matches they're going to remember from Sunday night. So a really good card. It's better than Stand and Deliver, which, again, is supposed to be their best card of the year. So it just goes to show you sometimes the biggest show doesn't tend to be the best.
Nate, bring us home.
All right. So I'm exceptionally excited about the show because I'm going. I think the match I'm looking forward to the most is Hayes versus Breaker for a couple reasons. I think the story they're telling this time is better. But the biggest reason for me is because I'm going to be in the building and it's Carmelo Hayes's kind of like welcome home. Lowell, Massachusetts and the surrounding area is kind of the home of Chaotic Wrestling. And, you know, he spent some time in Chaotic. And being from this area, I have a feeling he's going to get a massive reaction. Lowell, I've said it before on the show, Lowell is a big wrestling town. Lowell, if you guys remember when Samoa Joe beat Finn Balor, I was there in the building for that in Lowell. And that was actually the exact same building that Shawn Michaels lost to Smile in. Big wrestling town, a lot of history in that town. I can see this being like the reaction for Carmelo Hayes, like being one of the bigger reactions I've heard in not in my life, but in quite some time. So I think that's the one I'm looking forward to the most. Heritage Cup being the second, partly because it's a new match type for me, but also it's a new match type for me. And because the two of you guys have kind of hyped me up for this style match. And it's also, you know, I'm Darren Dragon Lee. So it's going to be good. As far as Von Wagner goes, I don't know if the ship has sailed. I'm like, I want to say yes. But this is the first time I actually give a shit, and I'm going to say that, about Von Wagner. I'm really curious about this baby picture and why, you know, what happened, what the scars are and all that. I'm sure we're going to eventually get some sort of an answer here, but I'm curious. And I feel like it's giving him, this character, something for us to dig our teeth into. We have no idea who Von Wagner was. Mr. Stone was screaming that at him. You know, who are you? We don't know who Von Wagner is. So I feel like that was some foreshadowing into giving him some sort of a story, as weird as it is. But I'm curious to see where this goes. And the fact that, you know, and even Kelly brought this up earlier, you know, there was a Von Wagner chant tonight. You know, he got a pretty loud pop from the Full Sail crowd, but you know what I mean? The NXT crowd, the Florida crowd there. You know, he got a pretty big pop. Now, if that happened in, you know, I don't know, Milwaukee or some other random town, I don't know why I pulled out Milwaukee, but, you know, I don't know if he would have got the same reaction because, you know, he has been in NXT so long and he's been in, you know, in that that area for so long. But I think that's promising. I don't remember ever seeing a reaction for Von Wagner like that. I don't think that necessarily means, you know, he's on the right track and everything's going to look up for him immediately. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to remain somewhat hopeful, even though I'm probably saying the ship has sailed.
I said Wagner had been around 5 or 6 years. Turns out it's 4 years and 2 months. But still,
and
about 4 years and 2 months.
It feels like it's been a lot longer than that.
Yeah, and he's only been on TV for 2, but, like, he was a name that we were hearing about a lot, and I know that Tom would tell me about Cal Bloom, and I would say, you know, they need a big guy, but I don't know if he's it. That was it. But there you go. That is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253.
Nate.
Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up on PWTorch.com for tonight's show.
All right. See you on Sunday if you are VIP, and otherwise we will see you in 7. Cheers.